That's awesome to hear Brian's story and to hear the progression from what he was doing here in Hoboken to how that is influencing what he's doing in South Africa. It's an amazing story, and it's really cool just to see him living out this rich story in South Africa. It's an amazing thing. My name is Justin. I'm really glad to be with you here this week. I was in Leawood, Kansas this past week, which is probably just about as exciting as it sounds. There's not a lot to do in Leawood. I eat a lot of barbecue. Yeah. There's a lot of restaurants in Leawood, Kansas, but every one of them has barbecue on the menu. Even Perkins, you know, we sort of associate with breakfast foods. They have a little separate barbecue menu that you can order barbecue even at Perkins. So it's all right with me. I like to eat barbecue. I eat a lot of barbecue when I'm there, and that's good. I like it. It's sort of unusual for me, though, because most of the time when I go to restaurants, I look for something I've never had before, and I want to try it. I look for something that looks interesting that I might enjoy. I remember the first time I went on a business lunch with my employer. We were sitting down to lunch. I was probably 17 at the time, and soft shell crab was on the menu. Soft shell crab. I'd never been exposed to soft shell crab before. What is it, I wondered. And my coworker Susan immediately began to tell us on how gross it was, how it was the most disgusting food, and she would never order it. She would never eat it. She just couldn't imagine. So I ordered it. I mean, it was really, I had to be careful. I had to really think twice about what I was eating or not think about what I was eating. And I got a little squeamish. But I did, you know, those little eyes staring back at me. But I did. I enjoyed it. I ate the soft shell crab. It makes for a great story. And I like to tell stories. It's something I really enjoy doing. And sometimes if you get me started, I'll just keep telling story after story because I like to tell stories. I like to tell stories about what's interesting, hopefully make you smile. And I think I'm not alone in that. I think all of us want to have our life story to be something worth telling. We want to tell a story about our life that's worth telling. And last week, we were introduced to this incredible dream that God has for us, that he wants us to have a rich story. He doesn't want us to have a story that's all about our consumption and how much we have, but he wants us to be able to tell a story about how we get to be the Good Samaritan. And so we were introduced to this, and we talked about a passage from 1 Timothy, where Paul writes, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. And by doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life." And so we got this glimpse, this gleam that God has his dream for us, that we can live a rich story. And this passage in particular, there's a phrase there that really catches my attention when he writes, "so they may experience true life." And like you, I have a lot of things that pull at me, that call to me, that say, hey, experience life like this. And maybe because I love adventure and I love to tell stories about my life, it's going to be easy for me to let that spiral into something where my story is all about me and all about what I've accomplished and what I've done. And God is saying, no, hey, you can have a rich story. And some of you walked out of here last week and you were thinking to yourself, what's it going to look like for me to have a rich story? What's it going to look like for us to have a rich story? And you walked out of here completely pumped. You're like, yes, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen. And then the week occurred. And maybe you're a little hesitant now thinking about this because today you find yourself a little bit more in debt than you were even 7 days ago. Despite your best intentions to rein it in and to be able to take control of your finances, you say to yourself, I'm worse off today than I was 7 days ago, and I haven't made any progress on living a more rich story, despite your best intentions. And we have great intentions. We have the best of intentions. We're in intention season. This is New Year's resolution season, and it's really unfair of us to call them New Year's resolutions. I mean, after all, it's not really fair to the word resolution what we do with these things. Instead, we have New Year's good intentions, right? We have good intentions to eat healthy, to get into shape. We have good intentions to read more and study more. Good intentions to drink less and smoke less. Good intentions to rein in our finances and take control of our finances. We have great intentions, but we're having poor execution. And this happens to me. This is a place where I really personally have to be careful because I have great intentions. I have the best intentions. Nobody wants to give more than I do. But if something comes in the way, if something stalls me, if something interferes with my good intention, I'll lose the train and nothing will ever happen. Like I have postcards that I wrote to my mom 15 years ago that I never sent. I have her address. I know where she's going, where the card is going to go, but I never got a stamp. And so it sits in my pile of cards that I just haven't sent. It plays out in my finances too. I had good intentions to not be in debt. And so I would really work hard to try to pay off my credit card bill every month. But invariably, I would fail to do it on time and I'd end up with a late fee. And that would, of course, roll into interest payments and that kind of thing. If I get stalled, if I get stopped for anything, it can ruin my best intentions. And for some of us, good intentions is much of what really bothers us. That we have good intentions, but we have no execution. We have good plans, but we don't follow through on them. We really have to be purposeful about what we're doing. And God says, yes, that's true. In fact, God says, I want you to have a plan. This is what he says in Proverbs 21:5. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity. But hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. God is saying, hey, you want to change the direction? You want to follow through on your good intentions? Then you need to have a plan. You need to have a plan. And God shows us over and over again as he is interacting with the people of Israel in the collected writings we call the Old Testament, over and over again we see that God is a planner. He has a plan. I want to tell you a few stories about that. For example, I want to tell you the story of Gideon. Gideon's a great story. Now, let me set the stage for you. This is after the Israelites had been rescued from the land of Egypt and after Joshua had helped them win the land that they were going to live in. And years later, Gideon is living in Israel, but the Midianites have come like locusts and taken over the land. And the Midianites, they were bad dudes. They took all the food. Anything that they harvested, they took. All of the cattle, all of the donkeys, all of the goats, all of the sheep, everything, they took it all. And so as a result, the Israelites had to hide from the Midianites. They had to hide anything that they had, or the Midianites would come and take it. And as a result, they were living almost in starvation conditions. And so the Midianites, or the Israelites, called out to God saying, hey, what's going on here? And this is how God first responds. In Judges chapter 6, it says, when they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. He said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt. I rescued you from the Egyptians and from all who oppressed you. I drove out your enemies and gave you their land. And I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you now live, but you have not listened to me. And to me, this is a familiar refrain. I think I've heard this even in my own life. Where God has rescued us, God has rescued us from something that was oppressing us, something that was enslaving us. Maybe it was poverty, or maybe it was addiction. Or maybe it was poor self-image and self-doubt. And God rescued us from ourselves and from this terrible thing that was oppressing us and brought us into a new land. But then when we get there, we forget. We forget who rescued us. We forget what he took us from and what he brought us to. We forget who did that. And we begin to trust in the gods of the land that we now inhabit. And maybe it's the God of success or the God of wealth or accumulation or self-reliance. And so we forget to trust God Because we're trusting these other things. And we may not call them gods, but that's what they are. They became to be the control of our lives. They begin to take over our lives. And so it's into this situation, into this circumstance, that God then responds further. An angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash and the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a winepress to hide the grain from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Whoa, what a greeting, right? Mighty hero, the Lord is with you. If somebody said, like, what, who, me? No, what? What a crazy greeting. But that's not how Gideon responds. He says this, "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say that the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." So Gideon says to him, says, how could this possibly be? If God is with us, how is it that we're in these terrible circumstances? And then the Lord returned to him and said, "Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you." Has that ever happened to you? Where you look at your situation and you go, how did this happen to me? How did I get into this circumstance? And then the Lord responds and says, "I have a dream for you to live a rich story. I want you to be the good Samaritan." Just like the Lord is saying to Gideon, I want you to go and rescue Israel. I want you to go and solve this problem. Well, Gideon responds, how many of us respond when God calls us to something? He doubts. He says, really? But Lord, Gideon replied, how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family. And the Lord responded to him and said, I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man. Some of you heard the conversation last week and thought about this idea of debt, and you looked at your pile of debt, and you said to yourself, how could I possibly live a life of being a good Samaritan when I am carrying this incredible weight around? Just like Gideon said, how can I do this? I'm weak. My tribe is weak. How can I be the one to rescue Israel? And the Lord responded by saying, I'm going to be with you. You're not going to do this alone. I'm going to be with you. And so Gideon responded to God. After much back and forth, he agreed. And so he gathered 22,000 men. And the story of Gideon is awesome. And it's a great example of how God has used Gideon to help rescue the nation of Israel. He gathers 22,000 men. God says, you don't need that many warriors. And eventually winnows it down to 300 men who drink like dogs. Really, go read it for yourself. It's a great story. You're just like, what a crazy idea. These are the guys you want to have along, the guys who drink like water, like dogs do. It's crazy. But it's an example of how God had a plan. God had a plan to use Gideon to rescue the nation of Israel. And you know, God is a planner. There are plans all over the story of God's interaction with us. Let's take a look at Moses as a good example. So here's Moses. Israelites are stuck in Egypt. They're enslaved to the Egyptians. And God starts the plan when Moses is put into the river and is rescued by Pharaoh's daughter. And then years later, he uses that man to rescue Israel. That seems like a plan to me, like he planned for Moses to be the guy. Another great example is Joseph. So Joseph was told, hey, one day your father and your brothers are going to bow down to you. Years later, he's sold into slavery. He ends up in prison, but he's in the position in which he can rescue the people of Egypt and the people of Israel from famine. It was all part of God's plan to rescue the people of Egypt and to rescue the people of Israel using Joseph. And in this case, you'll see that God has a grand plan. God's grand plan is to use us to bless the whole world, to use us to rescue the people who are standing around us, our neighbors and our friends. God has his plan to use us. Another example is Naomi. Naomi thought God was crushing her, thought God was oppressing her. But God used Naomi, and she ended up being the great-great-grandmother of the King David, one of the greatest kings of Israel. God plans. David's another great example. So David is a kid, and God sends Samuel to David and says, anoint this one to be the next king of Israel. They already had a king. Saul was already the king, but God was planning to put a man to be the king of Israel, a man after his own heart. And so he went and had David anointed. Over and over again, it's clear to us that God plans. And he wants you to plan too. In fact, you'll see that God plans. If we take a look at the example of Jesus Christ, we see this too is part of God's plan. Jesus was not like an afterthought, but he was there at the beginning. Listen to how Jesus describes himself in John chapter 8. Jesus answered, I tell you the truth, before Abraham was even born, I am. And as a result, the religious leaders that heard him do that wanted to kill him. They wanted to stone him. It made them so angry. Why did it make them so angry? Because Jesus used a term that God had used when he spoke to Moses. When Moses said to God, hey, who do I tell the Israelites sent me? God said, I am. And here Jesus is invoking that to the people who would probably be most familiar with that phrase. I am. From the very beginning, God knew that we would rebel. But he planned for Jesus Christ to come and to rescue us. Listen to what Paul writes in Galatians. When the time had fully come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law. And that phrase, had fully come, should evoke the mindset of a pear ready to eat, so juicy and sweet, just the right texture. All the pieces were in place. The time was right, and God made that critical move, and Jesus came at just the right time to save us, to rescue us, to bring us into the family. Paul writes about it in Ephesians this way. He says, even before he made the world, God loved us and chose us in Christ to be holy and without fault in his eyes. God decided in advance to adopt us into his family by bringing us to himself through Jesus Christ. This is what he wanted to do, and it gave him great pleasure. God works through plans. Now, one of the things I noticed as I was reviewing all of these plans is that he had to reassure all of those Old Testament guys, hey, I'm going to be with you. They all said to him, no, not me. You got the wrong guy. How could it possibly be me? Moses says, no, I can't speak well enough. Gideon said, no, I'm the weakest of my clan and my clan is weak. Naomi said, no, it couldn't be me because God is crushing me. Over and over, David said, no, this is the youngest son of Jesse. It can't be David. But over and over and over again, in response to our response of doubt, our response is, how could this possibly be me? How can you use me to rescue Israel? How can you use me to bless the whole world? How can you use me to be the Good Samaritan? God says, I'm going to be with you. And as I was reviewing these stories, the only one I couldn't really review was Joseph. I wasn't really sure that God had to reassure Joseph. But anybody who's got enough gumption to tell his dad and his 11 older brothers, hey, one day you're going to bow down to me, probably doesn't need as much reassurance as the rest of us. But God recognizes that we're fearful, that we're not sure, but he says, hey, I'm going to come along with you. I'm going to come along with you. Now, this may be news to you, that God has a plan for you, that he wants you to be part of his family, and he wants to use you to bless the whole world. And you say to yourself, how can this be? If God's such a great planner, how come my life is such a mess? What's going on here? How can that possibly be? And I want to share something with you that I learned early on when I started to follow Jesus Christ. It's this idea of God's perfect will versus God's permissive will. And the idea is this, that God's perfect will are the things he is absolutely doing. Like that he is using Jesus Christ to rescue us, to pay the penalty for our sin, to bring us back into the family. That is God's perfect will, and it's something he's absolutely doing. But then there are things that God is allowing to happen that he doesn't want to happen. But he allows to happen because he wants his perfect will to be accomplished. I see this at work. I run a computer department, and we have to upgrade servers. It's part of what we do. And when I do the server upgrade, I have a particular way of doing it. I have my pattern. I have my things that I do in order to do a server upgrade. But I can't do them all. I can't do them all. I don't have enough time. So I have a staff, and they help. They do their own server upgrades. And I say to them, hey, I need you to do this server upgrade. But there's a few things that I want you to do along the way. There's some things I tell them they absolutely, positively got to do. You got to have a change control. You got to have a written plan. But there are things that I don't necessarily tell them what they have to do. They have their own pattern of doing things, their own way of doing things, and I have to let them do it that way. Otherwise, I'd just be pushing all the buttons myself. So sometimes that means that they do the wrong thing. Sometimes it means that they do it the wrong way, and they have to come back to me and say, hey, I did the upgrade, but something happened, and this is the side effect that I didn't expect. What do I do now? And we talk about, okay, well, here's the solution to this particular problem. But sometimes they have to go back to the beginning and start over and start with a new plan because their plan didn't work out. I have to let them make those mistakes. I have to let those things happen in order for us to accomplish what we really need to accomplish for the firm and get all the server upgrades done. And so God says to you, hey, I have a plan for you. And I have a plan that I want you to be a part of. And you have a piece to play in the plan. So you need a plan. You need a financial plan. If you want to be the Good Samaritan, if you want to be part of rescuing the whole world, if you want to be part of blessing the whole world, you need a financial plan. And so God says, hey, I've got some ideas for you about your plan. Let me tell you one of the things he says. He says, do your planning and prepare your fields before building your house. In this passage, he's just saying something really simple, which is, I'm going to give you hints on how to prepare your plan. I'm going to give you ideas on how to make a good plan, a good financial plan. So here are some ideas about a good financial plan. First of all, I suggest that your financial plan, that it would be simple. Because a simple plan is easier to execute. You want a plan that you know very easily whether you should do this or do that. Some of you have really complicated plans with 14 different decisions to make before you know if you're going to go left or go right. But that makes it very hard to follow the plan. You need a simple plan, something that's easy for you to execute. Your financial plan should be something that you can easily understand and know what the next step is. The other thing about your plan is that you're going to need to share your plan. Somebody else alongside of you. You need to be able to explain your plan to somebody else. If you're married, your spouse, they need to execute the same plan that you are. You need to be on the same page. Now, some of you are financial gurus, and you have this incredible spreadsheet that's the budget. And it's got 14 interlinked tabs, and you track spending to the penny. But it's so complicated that nobody else can understand it. It's more complicated than last year's sales and commission report. You don't need that. You need a simple plan, something that is easy to understand, easy to know. What should I do in this circumstance? What should I do in this situation? The second thing about your plan is that you need to maintain it. You need to spend time with your plan, not just when you create it, but you need to review it. You need to look and say, okay, am I keeping up with the plan? Am I spending too much here, or have I encountered savings that I can put to something else? You need to review your plan. That's part of the benefit of it being simple, is that it'll be easy for you to look at and go, okay, I'm on target. Maybe when you review your plan, you're reviewing your plan saying, okay, this is the goal I'm headed towards. This is what I want my plan to accomplish. And by reviewing your plan periodically, let me review it every day for just a little bit, just to look and see, am I on target? You can remind yourself of the goal that you have for that plan. You can remind yourself what you want to accomplish. The third thing that your plan needs is it needs an emergency fund. Because frankly, sometimes life throws us curveballs. And Frank, if you don't plan for the emergency fund, when that curveball comes, you're going to miss. And it can crash your plan. So you need to have an emergency fund, so that you plan for that curveball and you have a chance to hit it. They say, people never plan to fail. They just fail to plan. And so as you're putting your financial plan together, make sure that it's simple. Make sure that it's reviewed. Make sure you make that a priority. Make sure that you have in your plan an emergency fund for those unexpected things that come up. And then the fourth thing that your plan needs is it needs to plan for a rich story. If you're planning to live a rich story, you need to include in your financial plan how you're going to be the Good Samaritan, how you're going to have an impact on the world, how you're going to be part of this mission to bless the whole world, to help people find their way back to God. And some of you are thinking, I don't know. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. Don't worry, we're going to come alongside of you and do it with you. We're going to help you know how to do that. Some of you are concerned, like, how do I know who to trust with my money? How do I know that what I'm going to do will have a good impact? And we'll help you with that. In fact, we want to help you along the way. We don't want to just tell you what you should do. We want to help you do it. So I want to remind you about several things that are coming up very soon. Today at 2 o'clock, we are having our debt meeting. If you are experiencing debt, if you're being oppressed by debt, then we want you to come to this meeting. And some of you might say, I don't want to go to that meeting. I'm nervous about going to the meeting. I'm embarrassed about my debt. And I want to tell you one thing about that. We care about you. We don't want you to be crushed by your debt. We want you to be freed from it. So I know you might feel embarrassed, you might feel ashamed about your debt, but please come to this meeting and let us help you get out of debt. Let us help you get freed from that oppression. The second thing is that we are having a meeting next Sunday at 2 p.m. to help you get started on your budget. So you're thinking to yourself, how do I start a budget? How do I create this financial plan? Come to our meeting next week at 2 o'clock right here at 301 Garden, and we'll help you get started with that. We'll have a presentation, this seminar, and we'll talk through and help you get started with it. And then the third thing is, and this is something I'm really excited about, is that in February, we're launching Financial Peace University here at Hoboken Grace. I'm really excited about what Financial Peace University is going to mean in the life of our family. I feel like the principles that we'll learn through Financial Peace University will enable us to be freed from oppression, the oppression of money. And instead of letting it dominate us, we'll take dominion over it. I feel like by the principles that we'll learn in Financial Peace University, that we're going to be able to become more free to love people, to be the Good Samaritan, to have an impact in our community, in our nation, and in the world, like Brian does in South Africa. I can't wait to see how God can use this in our lives to bring us freedom, to rescue us from the things that are oppressing us, that are enslaving us, so that we can live a rich story. As it says, good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. Will you pray with me? Father, first I want to say thank you so much for letting us be part of your mission to bless the whole world. Thank you that you are including us so that we can have an impact in the lives of our neighbors and our friends and our family and people we don't even know. Thank you for including us. And Father, I ask that those who are nervous, who are fearful about participating, I ask that you will give them your courage to remind them that as they go forward and as they develop this plan, that you're with them and that they're going to experience you and that you're going to bring them joy and peace. And as they encounter you, they feel your love. They feel your faithfulness. Quicken all of our hearts so that we can live that rich story like the Good Samaritan. And we'll talk to you again real soon. Amen.